That's Limerick 102 FM.
You're listening to Dig Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.
Hello there, and you're very welcome to Tech Thursday. This is Patrick Sheehan with you for the next hour or so. If you want to contact the show with any tech-related questions, you can always ring 069-66200, or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800. But as I always say, the best way to get in contact is any tech-related questions. You can email them to reception102@gmail.com, and you can mark them down for me, Patrick Sheehan, or you can mark them for Tech Thursday, and I'll get back to you in the next show. This show is pre-recorded, so you won't be able to send in live questions, but it's best off anyway to get the questions in advance, so I have a bit of time to look things up and things like that, if necessary. Some things I could answer off the bat, but other things I mightn't be able to. About certain things I would be more knowledgeable than others. And to start off with, I actually have a question from Mary in Drumcolliher. And she said her phone is getting very hot. It's overheating. And she said even when she opens her camera sometimes that it'll close it down because it says it's too hot. And is there anything that she can do about it? Now, she didn't say how old the phone is. Sometimes when phones get older, the cameras or the batteries can degrade a bit. And they need to be either replaced, or you can't take out the battery in most phones. It has to be done by a professional. You can't just pop off the back and pop out the battery and put in another one. It has to be stripped down and taken out, and some of them it's not even cost effective, especially on the lower price phones. You're kind of better off get a new phone. So I don't know. She didn't say actually what type of phone it was. She just said her phone was overheating. It was just a short message. But there could be other reasons, though. There could be other reasons. It could be some apps maybe that you recently installed could be running in the background all the time. So maybe you can do system checks sometimes in the settings and things like that, or there's different apps you can download to see your kind of like almost with a computer how you can see your CPU is running and what are running in the background and things like that. But if there's an app you recently installed, that might have something to do with it. So you could try deleting that, or just maybe stopping it. If you didn't want to delete it, just go into the app settings and stop, and see over the next while will the phone start working better? Because it could be that too. There could be even multiple apps working in the background. Another thing is the surfaces you're leaving it on. It happened to me when I kind of killed my own phone. I used to listen to podcasts at night, and I used to just leave the phone on the nightstand beside me, but sometimes I'd turn in the bed and I couldn't hear. Do you know, like just going to sleep with something playing in the background, and like half asleep, I'd like grab the phone and just put it on the other side of the bed, and then I'd end up having it kind of on the bed. And it's not good to have like electronic devices like laptops and all on like soft, cushiony kind of surfaces like that, because it's holding in the heat, and they get very hot. If you ever notice having a laptop on your lap or having a laptop in the bed and you're doing bits and pieces, they get very hot. So yeah, it's better off on a hard surface where the ventilation and everything works. And same with phones, but it happened to me a few times with one of my older phones. I like moved in during the night while I was asleep, and my pillow ended up on top of the phone. So it was like, and it's very bad anyway. You're not supposed to have a phone that close to you with when it's charging and things like that. I did though. I ended up, and then I'd wake up in the morning and the phone would be boiling, and that's not good at all. You know, it really kills the life of the battery. So what I do now is, I actually have an arm, a grippy arm thing, and I put it into that, and I don't take it out of it. And if I want to listen to something, like I have a Bluetooth speaker, so I can connect it onto that. So that's another thing too, different surfaces. There's ways as well of, they say, to prolong the life of a phone, that leaving it in all night plugged in. I know we all kind of mostly have to do that because you want to have a charge in the morning, but they say a phone is least stressed out when it's about 50% because it's most balanced, and that leaving it trickle charging on full all night isn't great for the battery either. But I kind of, that's what I do all the time, because even though I have fast charging and I could kind of not charge the battery at night if I wanted and plug it in the morning, but I don't trust it, you know, that kind of way, the time wise but I suppose by the time I'd have a shot, like say even if it was like 10 or 15% in the morning, if I plugged it in and fast charged it, it'd be pretty much charged by the time I'd have a shower and stuff anyway. So maybe that's what I will start doing. Maybe I'll start doing that instead. But you'd be afraid that it could die during the night or something, and then the alarm wouldn't go off, and I use it for my alarm in the morning. So that wouldn't be great if I woke up at 9 a.m. or something and I'm late for work and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so... that's one thing I'd recommend, is to not put it on any kind of soft surfaces like that. To maybe, if you want to prolong the life a bit, maybe not charge it overnight. If you have kind of any way of kind of fast charging, or if you have a way around it where you can just, when it gets low, charge it up and then plug it out, that kind of thing. That might help a bit. And any apps running in the background, try to keep as little of those running at the same time, because they'll overwork and overheat, and they'll probably slow it down anyway as well. Leaving it on the window as well, you know, like if you have it in the car and on a holder or something. Actually, do you know what I noticed actually is a big thing as well? I've noticed a few people doing it, a few relations. I was in their car and they have like a holder in the car, which is very handy. You put your phone into it, but it's right behind the blower for the hot air. And they turn on the blower then when it gets cold, and the blower is like pumping hot air in on top of the phone. And the phone is roasting hot then when they take it out, which is all very bad as well. So try to keep it away from the blower. Actually, what I do sometimes is I put my phone onto the near the blower in the hot weather and turn on the aircon and actually keep it cool. Yeah, so yeah, but that's another thing to watch out for. With the overheating, the phone can really overheat. So, and it just takes a lot of the life of the battery out of it. So that's that. Hope you get on okay with the phone. If you're not able to get it fixed, I hope you're able to get a good bargain on the other one. I'm sure some of the shops as well could replace the battery for you. It'd be worth pricing it. It'd be worth seeing how much it would be to fix it. If it's a very expensive phone, it might be worth doing it rather than buying a new one. And if it's a kind of a mid-range or low-range phone, you might be better off getting a new phone. It might be cheaper. Because sometimes it could be other things other than the battery going wrong too. It could be some problem with the CPU, and it could be causing the phone to overheat, or the screen. There could be problems with the screen that it overheats as well. Because I had a phone actually before that was overheating, and I actually replaced the battery. I had a go at doing it myself. It came out all right, an old LG. But it wasn't the battery's fault. The battery was working away then, and it was still overheating. It was actually some fault in the screen. And I wouldn't have been technical enough to be able to try to fix that. So I just replaced that in at that stage, because it would have cost too much. So I didn't. So that's some of the things to watch out for, Mary. I hope you get your phone sorted, or you get another nice phone. And on to some of the latest in tech. And I like to look through some of the latest in tech in this, as you know, because it's the things we'll be using in the future. And it's, you know, seeing what's down the line in our own lives, you know, when it comes to technology and things like that, and other things tech related, even currency and Bitcoin. So this is another, there was a Bitcoin conference on last week, and it's very up and down at the moment. You know, China are saying they don't want anything to do with Bitcoin. Some of them, they're shutting it down in some areas, and other ones then are embracing it, like El Salvador. And this is the story today. It says El Salvador makes cryptocurrency legal tender. El Salvador has become the first country in the world to officially classify Bitcoin as legal currency. Congress approved President Nayib Bukele's proposal to embrace the cryptocurrency with 62 out of the 84 possible votes on Tuesday night. The president said the government had made history and that the move would make it easier for Salvadorians living abroad to send money home. Bitcoin will become legal tender alongside the US dollar in 90 days. The new law means every business must accept Bitcoin as legal tender for goods and services unless it is unable to provide the technology needed to do the transaction. It will bring financial inclusion, investment, tourism, innovation and economic development for the country, President Bukele said in a tweet shortly before the vote. El Salvador's economy relies heavily on remittances or money sent home from abroad, which make up around 20% of the country's gross domestic product. More than 2 million Salvadorians live outside of the country, but they continue to keep close ties to their place of birth and sending money back more than $4 billion each year. Dollars. So yeah, they send a lot of money back, and I suppose it's a cheaper way of doing it. On Twitter, some financial and legal observers described the law changes as a remarkable accomplishment and a game changer, while others raised concerns about the cryptocurrency's volatility. Experts have warned that it could also complicate matters with the International Monetary Fund, where El Salvador is seeking a more than $1 billion program. Also, they mightn't, the IMF mightn't be too happy about that, and there might be trouble with their $1 billion program. So it'll be interesting to see where all that goes. Elon Musk's Boring Loop is finally transporting passengers in Las Vegas. So this is a new type of transport innovation that Elon Musk is trying to get in place. There's been several different iterations of this. There was a maglev train that ran in a vacuum, so there was no resistance, and the train was levitated on magnets, so there was no resistance there, and it could move really quickly. And that seems to have slowed down a bit. He was giving out prizes for people to have different ideas about that, but that seems to have gone quiet now. Then he built an underground thing in California, a tunnel that can be driven through. And now he's another one in Las Vegas. It's not quite the high-speed driverless future we'd hope for, but it certainly beats walking. So this is one going across Las Vegas. 40 feet below the searing hot streets of Las Vegas, Elon Musk's Boring Company wants to reinvent tunnels. In 2016, Musk launches his subterranean tunnel drilling enterprise after becoming fed up with the traffic in our surface world. On Tuesday, the Boring Company opened its first underground loop beneath Las Vegas Convention Center. The concept is surprisingly simple. Avoid gridlock by taking traffic underground. Simplify the transport experience by putting high-tech vehicles on a one-way loop and delivering on-demand rides. Dig tunnels where there once was dirt. So just have different tunnels to bring you out in different parts of... Is Las Vegas a city? I don't know. I presume it is. The experience is also surprisingly simple. Get in the car, drive through a tunnel, get out the other side. But while it's not exactly the high-speed robo-taxi of the future, I'd hope for, there's no doubt that this is the future of convenience, they say here. The 1.7-mile Las Vegas loop consists of three passenger stations, two above ground, one below. Connected by stretches of 12-foot-wide tunnels, all lit with colour-changing LED lights. Inside the loop, a fleet of 62 Teslas circle around, picking up and dropping off passengers and turning a 25-minute walk across the Mammoth Convention Centre into a 2-minute ride. So they're just, it's just across the convention center. It's more of a test, I presume, than anything else. But it's a proof of concept, I suppose. I don't know if that kind of thing is going to take off, but it might. You never know. It might do. NVIDIA GeForce RTX 3070 Ti gaming GPU crushes at 1440p, it says here, and seen it. But with few exceptions, it's not worlds better than the RTX 3070. So this is the 3070 Ti, so it's like a juiced up version of the 3070 graphics card. NVIDIA's GeForce RTX 3070 Ti is literally the most middling GPU of the past year, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. On almost every gaming performance test I've run, the 3070 delivered the median score in the RTX in the field of RTX 3000 series and AMD Radeon RX 6000 series cards, more or less. So it's kind of a middle of the road one. It starts at $600. 529 sterling. It doesn't say how much in euro. I presume around 600. Excels at 1440 entry 4K gaming as a natural upgrade from the RTX 2070 Super. But if you're looking to save a little money, or potentially a lot, given the state of GPU supplies, even the cheaper RTX 3070 will give a big performance lift over the previous generation under most conditions. You'll be able to buy it in theory starting the 10th of June. Yeah, there's a big shortage of these cards and everything at the moment. There's still a selection of different makes and brands, NVIDIA and AMD and lots of different ones out there. And but the prices are slowly creeping up on some of them because there's a shortage with all these chips and stuff. It's affecting everything. So, but good to see there are still different ones coming out, and they're making new innovations and improving on previous models and things like that. Meat giant JBS pays $11 million in ransom to resolve cyber attack. So this was posted 2 hours ago on the BBC, but I thought this was already maybe on. It was the other one. It was the oil and gas company or something that paid already. So this meat company now has paid as well the ransom. It's not good to see all these. I know it's good to see them back up and running again, and maybe they don't have a choice, but it's kind of given an incentive for more hackers to start hacking because they can get $11 million quid off of this meat company. And maybe other companies might not have that kind of money to pay. The world's largest meat processing company has paid the equivalent of $11 million of ransom to put an end to a major cyber attack. Computer networks at JBS were hacked last week, temporarily shutting down some operations in Australia, Canada and the US. The payment was reportedly made using Bitcoin after plants had come back online. JBS says it was necessary to pay to protect customers. In a ransomware attack, hackers get into a computer network and threaten to cause disruption or delete files unless a ransom in cryptocurrency is paid. This was a very difficult decision to make for our company and for me personally, said JBS Chief Executive Andre Nogueira. The company added that it had paid the money because of the sophistication of the attack, even though the vast majority of its plants remained operational. It was just a threat. It was just they said they were in the network, and that if they, I suppose they shut down the networks, but they needed them to work. But if they were afraid that if they started them up again, that the hackers would be able to delete everything. You know, it's like if you get a hack in your computer and you pull the plug on the Wi-Fi. And you say, okay, I'm after cutting off the hacker. But then you're afraid to plug back in again in case they still have access to your computer, that kind of thing. So it kind of, that's why everything was shut down. So it's a pity that these things are happening. And cryptocurrency is a good thing, you know, for kind of freedom from like the likes of the Federal Reserve in America and things like that. But the downside is that they can be easily used. And they were talking about that human trafficking and drugs and things like that makes cryptocurrency makes it much easier to transfer large amounts of currency to pay for illegal things like that as well. So that's a pity that things like that are happening. Google to change global advertising practices in landmark antitrust deal. Google said it would make changes to its global advertising business to ensure it did not abuse its dominance bowing to competition pressure for the first time in a landmark settlement with French authorities. The deal with the French competition watchdog could help rebalance the power over advertising in favour of publishers. They had held sway over the business in the pre-internet era, but lost control with the rise of Google and Facebook. The settlement announced yesterday, which included a fine of €220 million, was the first time the US tech giant has agreed to make changes to its ads business, which brings in the bulk of its revenue. The decision to sanction Google is particularly significant because it's the first decision in the world focusing on the complex algorithmic auction process on which the online ad business relies, said France's antitrust chief Isabelle de Silva. The French settlement alone may not meaningfully affect industry market share, according to ad support media companies and Google's advertising rivals. But they hope it inspires similar competition cases in the US and other jurisdictions. It's very dominant. Like, if you add YouTube and Google together, they have like, how much is it? Like 80-90% of search, of all search on the internet. It's crazy. So yeah, they're unbelievably powerful. Arctic micro animals survives 24,000 years in permafrost. So this is in RTE's Science and Technology. It's very interesting. A microscopic animal called how do you pronounce this? Beetaloid. There's more in the name. Beetaloid rotifier came back to life after being frozen for 24,000 years in Siberia and then successfully made clones of itself. This is like the first scenes of a horror film. Successfully made clones of itself 100,000 times, and then it took over the building. Stas Malvin, who co-founded a paper in the journal Current Biology on the development, told AFP the finding raised intriguing questions about what mechanisms the multicellular animal used to endure its long rest. Our report is the hardest proof as of today that multicellular animals could withstand tens of thousands of years of cryptobiosis, the state of almost complete arrested metabolism, said Mr. Malvin of Institute of Physiochemical and Biological Problems in Soil Science in Russia. Yeah, so that's very interesting. 24,000 years it stayed alive inside in the ice. Amazing. What have we next? The US seeks to overturn Trump's ban of our executive order seeking to ban TikTok and WeChat. US President Joe Biden is withdrawing a series of executive orders that sought to ban new downloads of WeChat and TikTok and ordering a new Commerce Department review of security concerns posed by both of those. The administration of former President Donald Trump had attempted to block new users from downloading the apps and ban other technical transactions that Chinese-owned TikTok and WeChat both said would effectively block the app's use in the United States. The courts blocked those orders and that never took effect. Okay, so those orders never really came into effect anyway, so it's kind of it didn't make much difference anyway. So, and Biden has now revoked the order, so they kind of never went to anything. WeBio receives $500,000 investment from Finch Capital. This is on RT Science and Technology as well. Dublin company WeBio has received $500,000 investment from Finch Capital to complete €1.5 million euro in pre-Series A funding. The company, which delivers credit collections and payments using AI, says the funding will be used to hire more employees, particularly in the area of AI. Yeah, and AI now is used in everything as we go along. You know, there's technology has been put into everything from washing machines to fridges to speakers, of course, and all kinds of everything in between. It's mad the amount of stuff that's given technology and artificial intelligence It says it will double its research and development team and expand the sales and customer successes success teams to address the market demand. It's an extremely large market and is set for significant growth, and we believe it's that a specialist in this space, WeBio, is extremely positioned to lead the industry in a new direction where customer engagement across the debt cycle is a positive experience. I don't know what the debt cycle is, DEBT cycle. But anyway, they said that their AI is going to be pretty good. WeBio operates in the conversational AI market, which has experienced growth to 11 billion euro by 20, or is expected to grow to 11 billion euro by 2024. So the likes of, when you talk to your smart speakers and things like that. OnePlus to launch stripped down Nord CE 5G this week. So the Nord is their budget version, because they used to be a budget phone maker, the OnePlus 1 and 2 and all those, and then they went up to a flagship phone with flagship prices. They got expensive, and then I think they realized that their sales had gone down a bit, so then they released the Nord, which was the lower price one. So now there's a stripped down version of the Nord, but it's still 5G. It's planning to announce a new budget smartphone called the Nord CE 5G. Tech Radar has a render of the device straight from OnePlus itself. Yeah, it's fairly standard. Actually, looks like my phone. Of course, they're the same company, Realme X2 Pro. It looks very similar. It has the same phone layout, or the same camera layout on the back and all. The CE 5G, however, will be a little cut back in terms of specs. Does it give any of the specs here? You see mid-range phones on the market with very exaggerated specifications. Some of them have very good specs for very cheap prices as well, like they used to do. We actively avoided some of those features and kept things we felt would really make a difference in the daily atmosphere. So they're just, well, that they all kind of do that. They pick and choose what they think the customer mostly wants and all. They kept fast charging, warp charge 30T+. I don't know, is that 30 watts? A 90 hertz AMOLED display or 5G. So that's what they decided to keep. OnePlus itself has been guilty of these exaggerated specifications in the past. I don't know, I like that though. Well, if they're good specifications and they work, then what's wrong with it? If you can give me a phone that has the similar specs to a 1,000 euro phone for like 350 or 400 quid, and it still works really good and still reliable, it charges fast, it lasts a long time, the camera is pretty good, then I don't see the problem. I'll take that, thanks very much. For example, I had a quad camera setup that included a 2 megapixel macro camera and depth sensor of dubious. Yeah, well, that's true. There is a lot of added stuff that's not necessary. What I like is I have used the macro camera the odd time. Even my one has a 5 megapixel macro camera, I think. And I've actually had to use it sometimes. Like, do you know, if you're trying to give somebody the password for the router in my house. Say someone comes in, oh, can I connect to your Wi-Fi? Okay. So I go and take a picture of the back of it and it won't focus it on it. And then I turn it to the macro camera and it takes a picture of it straight away and I send it to them. It's handy for, or taking a picture, a close-up of a flower or something like that. It's quite nice for that. So there is some, but they wouldn't be like everyday, daily use things, but they are handy. But sure, the phones are supposed to be able to do everything nowadays. So even if it's just something you use once every month, it still has it, rather than a phone that just won't do it, that just won't focus on something that close up, That camera proposition, as well as CE's 5G processor and price, will be key in the product's appeal. So it has a 64 megapixel main camera, 7.9 millimeter thickness, and unlike the Nord, a headphone jack. Oh, so that's good. A full reveal is happening tomorrow on the 10th. Oh, that's today. This article was posted yesterday. So I'm skipping an eye out for that, see what it's like. So that's the new OnePlus Nord. So another phone, the Moto G Stylish 5G is a step up version of our favourite budget stylus phone, and this is the favourite of The Verge, featuring a big battery 5G for 400. Motorola has announced a Moto G Stylus 5G, a new similar version. I suppose any of these, there's a lot of these, and I suppose the best thing is to look at them all and see what you want and kind of compare them all against each other and decide for yourself which one best suits your needs, you know. the thing I'd want most, I suppose, is a good battery. I was always like trying to get the top chipset, you know, the 800 series Snapdragon or something like that. But after having kind of used my brother's phone, he has a 700 series and things like that, there's no massive discernible difference in because I'm not a gamer. I don't game on phones a lot. I use the PlayStation if I was gaming, or whatever console if I was gaming. But yeah, so I don't need. I wouldn't have a heavy usage. The closest thing I'd get to do to heavy usage is maybe editing photos or something like that, a little bit on the phone, but a lot of that, if I was after doing like a photo shoot or something like that, I'd be definitely doing it on a laptop or on my desktop. I wouldn't be using the phone anyway. So yeah, so that's like you can even change what your preferences are when it comes to what you want in your phone as well. So but anyway, this Motorola has a Snapdragon 480 5G chipset with sub 6 gigahertz 5G connectivity and bigger so it's kind of like sub 6 gigahertz, so it maybe has only the slower version of 5G. It wouldn't have like the fastest version of 5G. It has a 5000 milliamp hour battery though, so that's very good size. It's at the higher end of the budget range. It's $400 and will go on sale on June the 14th. Does it say anything? 6.8 inches, big phone, 1080p screen, ready for your notes and doodles, courtesy of it. Oh, it has a built-in stylus like the Samsung Note. It includes 4 gig of RAM. That's a bit, yeah. Well, for a mid-range, I suppose, it's okay. It's on the lower end of okay. 128 gig of storage and ships with Android 11. There's a headphone jack, so it's kind of, it might be one to compete with the likes of the Pocophone and that OnePlus we were just talking about that's coming out. So if you are thinking of like any of these, would be pretty okay, like so you could compare them all against each other. The A series Samsungs, that Motorola, the OnePlus Pocophones, OnePlus and Pocophones and all those, you can compare them against each other and any other ones that might be out there, and see which would be the best for you. How to use two-factor key security. So this is like, there's a picture here of like a key with a, or a set of keys with a little chip, looks like a USB stick. Two-factor authentication is a good way to add an extra layer of security to online accounts. It requires the use of your smartphone, however, which is not only inconvenient, but can be a problem if your phone is lost or breached. Hardware security keys. Actually, I have a memory stick that has USB-C on one side and has USB on the other side. Wouldn't that be handy as a security stick, as one of those? Because I presume you just plug it in and it authenticates, say, if you're going to make a purchase or something. So it's something you always have on you, as well as your password or whatever. But wouldn't it be handy to have a USB-C on one side and a USB-A on the other side? So if it's, or if you're a Apple user, to have a Lightning one on one side and a USB-A on the other side. Yeah, so that'd be handy. I don't know. Let's see what it says here. It requires the use of your smartphone, however, it can be a problem if your phone is lost or breached. Hardware security keys can offer an additional layer of security to password protection. Online accounts and in turn your, or to protect your accounts and in in turn your identity. It also is not hard to install. Here's how to set them up in your Google account. Security keys can connect your system using USB-A, USB-C, Lightning, or NFC. Oh yeah, they have individual ones, but they don't have dual ones. It'd be handy to have a dual one, like the memory stick. So that's a good business idea for one of these companies. They're small enough to be carried on a keychain, with the exception of Usibo's 5C Nano Key, Yubico's 5C Nano Key, which is so small it's the safest when kept in your computer's USB port. Oh, right. Oh, so it's a tiny little, like one of the dongles you use for connecting a wireless mouse or something. They use a variety of authentication standards. FIDO 2 UF. U2F, smart card OTP, and open PGP3. When you insert a security key into your computer, you connect one wirelessly, or you connect one wirelessly, your browser issues a challenge to the key, which includes the domain name of the specific site you are trying to access. The key then cryptographically signs and allows the challenge, logging you into the service. So that's very handy. It's a little extra layer of safety. You can have a physical key that you can use on devices. But it would be handy to have dual ones, all right? For you can have the same key to unlock stuff on your phone and on your laptop or desktop. So that's my idea there. You can have it for nothing. Three Magic Leap executives are reportedly leaving the company. We'll just go through the last few stories here because, as usual, the show is flying. So Magic Leap was that kind of innovative, kind of futuristic, the 3D projection kind of things where you have things appear in front of you. And were they mostly using it for a business, or is that the other one I'm thinking of, the Microsoft one? Let's see. Three top Magic Leap executives, Chief Technology Officer Paul Greco, Chief Operating Officer Hank Villestra, and Chief Patent Officer David Lundmark, are reportedly leaving the company in the coming months. The news yesterday says that Magic Leap has also rehired its former Chief Marketing Officer Daniel Diaz. So there's big shakeups there. It says they're not exactly sure why they're all leaving. Greco have been at the company since 2013. A Magic Leap spokesperson declined to comment on the story. An augmented reality start didn't receive $3 billion in funding or some of their history, a company friendly AR headset, and finally pivoting to enterprise customers. Yeah, so that's what I was thinking. Yeah, it was kind of business customers they were using to be able to display whatever kind of work that they work on. Before its dramatic contraction last year, it's continued to pivot under Johnson, a former Microsoft executive, and plans to release a second generation headset in limited quantities in 2021. So it's a tough time for some companies, and it's a great time for others then that are really doing well. Apple Podcast says it'll launch an in-app subscriptions globally on the 15th of June. After some major hiccups and a delay, Apple Podcast says it's launching in-app subscriptions next week. The global launch of subscriptions and channels, which are groups of shows, will happen on June the 15th, the company says today in an email to podcasters with The Verge. The Verge has viewed. So you can, some podcasts will be behind a paywall, I presume. You'll have to click in and purchase. Is it individual ones or subscriptions, I suppose? They first debuted in April with a launch planned for May, and then emailed creators to tell them the feature launch would be pushed to June to ensure we are delivering the best experience, likely because of issues the company introduced with a recent back-end update. Through the feature, listeners can subscribe to certain shows or networks for early access and ad-free content, among other perks. Okay. Oh yeah, so that everything is going that way nowadays, isn't it? You need about 10 different TV subscriptions, and now you'll have 10 different audio subscriptions as well if you listen to different podcasts and stuff. It's crazy. Android 12 beta has two new ways of managing Wi-Fi connections. So there's a beta version of Android 12 out. Google has announced it's rolling out a second beta for Android 12 to Pixel phones today. It adds a few more Android 12 features that were announced at Google I/O. Last month, we weren't introduced to the in the first or they weren't introduced in the first beta. So let's see. In quick settings, Android 12 now has the new button called Internet that replaces the old Wi-Fi button. Tap it and you'll get a screen that will let you switch between Wi-Fi networks and also shows your current cellular connection, which you can also toggle. So it kind of does the same thing, but it shows it to you a different way. Google says the idea is to help users switch between their internet providers and troubleshoot network connectivity issues more easily. Google posts as readers to let us know what you think. They're also picking up a clipboard read notification, which appears anytime an app reads the current clipboard. It shows up on when one app reads the clipboard from something you've copied in another. In other words, it won't annoyingly pop up if you copy and paste when in the same app, unlike other notifications. This one will apparently appear from the bottom of the screen. It's similar to a feature that arrived on the iPhone, first on the iPhone, as more people realized that apps were asking for clipboard content when they really shouldn't be. Okay, so it's a kind of a safety thing or a privacy thing. I saw this was announced on Twitter yesterday, and I've seen a lot of Twitter users and YouTubers are like, no, thank you. Marquez Brownlee is a famous YouTuber. He said, no thanks. Facebook plans their first smartwatch for next summer with two cameras and a heart rate monitor, a detachable display with cameras for capturing video about your phone. Video about your phone? Without your phone. Oh, sorry, yeah. Oh, so you can video on it on its own. Facebook is taking a novel approach to its first smartwatch, which the company hasn't confirmed publicly, but currently plans to debut next summer. The device will feature a display with two cameras that can be detached from the wrist while taking pictures and videos that can be shared across Facebook's suite of apps, including Instagram, The Verge has learned. A camera on the front of the watch display exists primarily for video calling, while a 1080p autofocus camera on the back can be used for capturing footage when detached from the stainless steel frame on the wrist. Facebook is so you can detach it from the stainless steel frame. Also, when you take it off, you can like hold it as a tiny little, like a mini phone or something for doing, or a mini camera or something like that. Facebook is tapping other companies to create accessories for attaching the camera hub to things like backpacks. Okay, so it can be like a mobile camera as well, or like an action camera or something like that. The company is requested to be anonymous. So the idea is to encourage owners of the watch to use it in ways that smartphones are now used. It's part of Facebook CEO's Mark Zuckerberg's plan to build more consumer devices that circumvent Apple and Google, the two dominant mobile phone platform creators that largely control Facebook's ability to reach people. The planned device is Facebook's first stab at releasing hardware specifically for the wrist, opening up another area of competition with Apple and Google. Yeah, so that's interesting, huh? Overwatch is getting cross-platform play on PC and console. So, which consoles? Until now, the communities of PC, Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo Switch were segmented, but this update could make it easier to find online matches to join. So you'll be able to cross-platform all those, so that'll be cool, as well as PC. Former Volkswagen Audi bosses to pay Volkswagen millions over Dieselgate. Volkswagen will net around $350 million in settlements. Volkswagen received as part of a settlement with executives who ran the company during the Dieselgate emissions cheating scandal after claiming they breached their duty of care. So what it was they had the computers in the cars were programmed to know when they were being tested for emissions and to purposefully kind of tune themselves down to give out less emissions. And then when they were out on the road, they were putting out like up to 100 times more emissions or whatever, something much higher, and they were purposefully doing that to cheat the system. But some company, I think it was a company in America, or I don't know, some college or something, actually put like a testing system in a car and drove it out on the road and tried the emissions there, and they got completely different figures than when they had it set up in a inside in a testing center. So that's they kind of got caught for that. So the bosses have to pay back a lot of money now. Apple may have accidentally confirmed the existence of an M1X MacBook Pro. Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference keynote came and went this year without a new MacBook Pro, but it looks like that wasn't the original intent. Intriguingly, Apple quietly included the phrases M1X MacBook Pro and M1X as tags on its YouTube video in the live keynote, as spotted by Max Basler. Via 9to5 Mac. Not only does that sound like tacit confirmation of at least one new ARM-powered MacBook Pro, it also corroborates the rumors that include the M1 chip. So that's cool. Some nice stuff to come for Apple users. SpaceX Starlink is in talks with several airlines for in-flight Wi-Fi. The satellite internet network, he has all those satellites, Elon Musk, floating around the place with internet. He said he could supply airplanes with Wi-Fi. Satellite internet network is vying with OneWeb to put faster Wi-Fi on commercial airplanes. The team behind SpaceX growing satellite internet Starlink is in talks with several airlines to beam internet to their airplanes, the project vice president said during a conference panel on Wednesday. Expanding Starlink from rural homes into airlines is an expected move for Elon Musk's space company as it races to open the broadband network commercially later this year. So that'd be pretty cool for people that fly a lot and stuff to be able to have internet. Although sometimes you want to fly, when you're flying, you're glad to get away from it. But this could make it available wherever you go. Sony announces a $9,000 professional drone it teased at CES. It's built to take Sony's cameras into the sky. Oh, so you just put a camera, you put an SLR into it, or a mirrorless camera, mirrorless SLR, I suppose, into the drone. So it's a very fancy looking drone. There, it's Airpeak S1, $9,000 worth. But I suppose it's for professional photographers, and it would connect up to the. I suppose you can connect up wirelessly using your phone or something like that to take the pictures, and or the screen on the the drone, more than likely. The drone's controller will have a screen. And for our last story today, Samsung pushes pixel size even further with new camera sensor. The ISOCELL JN1 has 50 million 0.64 ultrapixels, or 50 million ultrapixels, the smallest size in the industry. Samsung has announced a new image sensor for smartphone cameras that it says has the smallest pixels in the industry. The ISOCELL JN1 is a 50 megapixel sensor with a relatively tiny 1 to 2.76 inch format, meaning its pixels are just 0.64 ultra pixels in size. For comparison, Samsung already broke records in 2019 with the slightly larger ISOCELL GH1, another 50 megapixel sensor with 0.7 ultra pixels. Conventional camera wisdom says the smaller pixels usually result in worse image quality with higher noise. So why is Samsung doing this? According to the company, it's about the form factor versatility. The sensor's smaller size means it can be used in ultra-wide or telephoto camera modules, which are challenging to design when size is at a premium. So they're saying, like, we know the quality isn't great, but we want it to fit in smaller devices and things like that. But they're allowed to use a lot of software as well to not allow it, but they're capable of using software to kind of fix a lot of the problems as well, which has some amazing results in some of the phone cameras, especially. So hopefully that works out well, and hopefully it has a nice results. And so that's all the latest in tech for today. Hope you've enjoyed it. As always, you can call 069-66-200 and leave your questions, tech related questions, for myself, or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800, or you can always email reception102@gmail.com and mark it down for Patrick Sheehan or Tech Thursday, and I'll get back to you in the next show. Thanks for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. I'll talk to you again next week. Peace.
You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.
West Limerick 102 FM.